Whether you're looking for answers to specific life questions or seeking to become the best version of you possible, welcome to the Mental Breakdown and Psych Reg podcast, where we offer insight, information, and strategies based upon research and years of practice as clinical psychologists. So sit back, have a listen, and get connected with our hosts, Dr. Bernie Wilkinson and Dr. Richard Marshall.
But if we did a whole course on personality, because, you know, we're gonna do this one on history of personality theory. If we did an entire course on personality and just kind of went through the whole thing and talked about the different theories and theoretical models and how our idea of personality has evolved over time, and then really kind of dug into some of these, you know, the trait state debate and those kinds of things, I think that would be a great way to kind of build that course in personality. But you know, I guess we should get to what we're going to talk about today.
Yes, we should, because it's an exciting topic.
It is an exciting topic, and it's
I'm glad we're finally doing this one.
Yeah.
It's much misunderstood, I think.
Yeah. It is. I think that it's a lot misunderstood because of where it came from. You know.
Right.
You've said this before, that, you know, Freud has, he's such the poster boy for so many jokes and so many caricatures of the history of psychology in general, and then, you know, when you get into the psychosexual stages of development and you get into some of those things, you know, people always talk about, you know, the mommy issues and the daddy issues, and so anytime you talk about Freud and some of the things that he's brought to the table for us in our field, I think that's immediately where people go as they start thinking about that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we mentioned in the column the other day.
Yeah
about he's much maligned.
Yes.
And he's probably the most frequently cited psychologist or psychiatrist in the world.
Yeah.
And he's the least well understood.
Right.
So he's the most cited, least well understood.
Yeah.
At least among most of us. So.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that's where it starts.
When I teach the class, you know, I talk to students about how we associate... we associate these people with certain things. We associate Freud with the psychodynamic theory, of course, because he's the father of psychodynamic theory. But then we attach some of these other things to him, and we think, you know, he's always talking about the subconscious and the unconscious and the ego and the id and all this kind of stuff. You know, where does all this stuff come from? And I remind them that, you know, those theories are rooted in his training.
Right.
You know, he was a neurologist, he was a psychiatrist, and he knew the brain.
Right.
And but he also, you know, practiced hypnotism, and so he understood the importance of the subconscious and these subconscious drives. And I think that leads into the discussion about personality very well.
That's
because
right.
We talked about this in one of the podcasts, you know, in the week.
Right.
And that is that, you know, for the most part, our personality exists outside of our actual awareness that it exists.
That's
we don't really think about our personality the way that we think about our hair color or some other obvious, more concrete traits of ourselves. Right. You know, we don't think about whether or not we're introverted or extroverted until somebody asks us about it. And oftentimes when they ask us about it and we respond, we're wrong. We say one thing and somebody else will say, I don't see you really that way.
Right.
You know, we may think, you said this, I think, on the podcast from yesterday, you know, you don't feel, you were talking about being a little more reactive.
Yeah. Right.
And you said, you know, you don't feel like you are.
Right.
But other people may say that you come across that way.
The rest of the world seeing something that I don't intend for.
Right.
Them.
And so, it's because we don't really appreciate our personality as we're experiencing and living our personality.
Yeah, I heard one time that we don't hear our own tone of voice.
Right.
Okay. That may well be true because we don't.
Mm-hmm.
We're typically not aware of what tone mm-hmm. we're conveying to others.
Yeah.
They're judging us based on a tone that they hear.
And I'm going to bring up something that I don't think you would bring up, but I'm going to bring it up anyways, because you should be nervous.
Wow. Because I'm afraid of where this is even headed.
But we talked about this before, like off camera and off away from the microphones and stuff. But, you know, there because people you said that people have commented about this, that they say that you sometimes look angry on camera and when we're talking about things. And, you know, I think about... You know how much we laugh and joke and everything before we start our the podcast, and you know we're trying some new ways to start things anyways, but we laugh and joke and everything before the podcast starts, and then when it starts, you know, we get serious and we're focusing on the topic and everything, and maybe, you know, I think that maybe to my detriment sometimes I'm a little bit more affectively responsive, my facial expressions mm-hmm. reflect, you know, what I intend for them to, and you concentrate a little bit more, and so, but again, it's not something that you're aware of. You don't think about it that way.
Right. I'm not in pain. I'm not angry.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't kicked the dog this morning. I've had a good breakfast,
mm-hmm.
but it doesn't look that way.
No. And it's interesting because it's sort of a reflection of personality. It's a reflection of, you know, the fact that we behave and we present in ways that we're not always completely aware of.
And that are not always consistent.
Right.
That's why when you judge another person based on facial expression or tone mm-hmm. of voice, you may get it wrong once in a while.
Right.
You know, people will come up to you and say, gee, what's wrong? And I say, nothing. I'm mm-hmm. feeling fine.
Yeah.
That's not how I look.
Right.
And I understand that now. Because I'm in my 40s, you know, so over time...
For the second time...
Oh, never mind.
But no, and maybe it's because I've known you for so long that you know there are many times when I can tell,
right.
you know, I can differentiate your frustrated demeanor from your I'm thinking,
right.
from your.
I guess it's hard for me to think. Maybe that's what it is.
It takes a lot of work.
It's a lot of work,
really,
because things are so slow. And rusty.
Really think
that it takes so much effort for me to think.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe. But you know what? I will notice this too. It is very different when you're doing it here on the podcast than when you do it in workshops. In workshops, you're not your affect is very different.
Because I get my energy from other people.
Yes. Yeah.
I learned exactly. that a little while ago.
Yeah, and it
that
again kind of goes
when I'm in
about.
Front of an audience,
mm-hmm.
my affect is very different.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so here you know, in a room, sitting in front of a monitor and a camera,
sitting beside it's, you.
You know.
Now maybe it is your fault.
It may be. It probably is.
I hadn't thought about that.
It probably is. I just.
I could blame you for this.
I overwhelm you with the
what?
Energy.
With your energy.
You have no idea what's going to happen. But
right, I'm changing my demeanor now. From now on, by golly, I'm going to sit up straight.
But you know what? That is a perfect segue into the next part that we're going to talk about. So let's think about what is psychology, or what is not what is psychology? What is personality? And you know, because there's topics about or points about whether or not it's changeable,
right.
whether or not it adjusts over time. There's the whole state trait debate,
mm-hmm.
And so, you know, can you change your personality? You know, is your personality something that's flexible and amenable to what's going on in your environment? So,
you know, this topic is going to bring out the teacher in me.
All right,
and so I'm going to begin by saying, if you're listening to this on personality, you need to get a piece of paper and something to write with, pen or pencil. You're going to need to take notes on this one.
We didn't tell them there was going to be a test.
No, not a test.
Okay.
But you need to keep notes because this is going to come in three segments
mm-hmm.
of three. You like three.
It's so balanced.
I like two.
So balanced.
You like three. So we're going to do three.
The stool stands so nicely with three legs.
Three legs. If it's supposed to have three,
well.
So we're gonna divide this discussion into three parts, and each of the parts has three segments.
Okay.
So if you have something to write with, you can keep track of where of how we're doing. I wish we had a board behind us and we could write it on the board.
Yeah, when we do our workshops, I think that's what...
We'll put it on the board so you can see them. Yeah. Okay, that's a good... I hadn't thought about that before.
Yeah, yeah.
And you can follow along as we're talking.
Okay. Yeah, we're working on starting some courses that we'll be posting. And yeah, I think a whiteboard will be great.
So. But you're right. When we talk about personality, it's very difficult to define personality. Mm-hmm. And if you read 12 different books about personality...
They're all different.
Each gives a different definition of it. At the same time... I think you already mentioned this, that the whole concept of personality has changed over time.
Right.
And it's important to remember that during the Middle Ages and into the Renaissance and almost into the 1800s, nobody cared about personality because there was no need to. If you lived on a farm in medieval Europe, people didn't think about their lives. They just did what they were supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
If you live in some cultures... You don't think about the individual. You're part of a culture, you're part of a society, and there's no thinking. I mean, you talk to people about the self, they look at you in a very puzzled way, like, that's not how we think about this. We think about it as a family, I'm part of a group. So this notion of personality is something that grew out of Western European thinking and Western European culture, starting in the late 1700s, about the time that we had our American Revolution and then the French Revolution. And it wasn't any accident that Thomas, in the Declaration of Independence, that all men are born equal, and we start thinking about the individual, what the individual is supposed to do.
Right.
So it didn't start until the late 1700s, early 1800s. Freud comes along at the end of 1800s and finally puts together the first theory. Mm-hmm. You know, you say, well, why didn't it happen before Freud? Because people didn't worry about this stuff.
Yeah.
It wasn't until Freud, it wasn't until the second half of the 1800s that Freud and other thinkers, like psychologists, physicians, began thinking about the individual.
Okay. Right. You know, I think an important piece of that is that something that Freud did that was somewhat novel to that point was Freud really thought a lot about women and children.
Right.
You know, prior to that, the focus was so much on men.
On adult males.
And adult males. And, you know, he talked about children and women in a way that was very, very new and different. And that, I think, really contributed to this model of, you know, who we are is a developmental process.
Right.
And it's not, you know, children, I think you've mentioned this before, children are not just little adults.
Not little adults.
You know, they are going through a process of development that changes them.
Mm-hmm.
And their experiences change who they are and how they manifest different traits and characteristics. And so I think that really influenced, because, you know, again, he was a neurologist by training.
Right.
And so he understood how the brain worked.
Mm-hmm.
And then he was able to take that and put it into words that I think people, at least at the time, seemed to understand much better than, you know, trying to talk about the limbic system or something like that.
Right.
He was able to talk about the id and say, you know, hey, this is this underlying subconscious drive that you have, sort of a hedonistic drive that you're constantly seeking pleasure. So instead of talking about the limbic system doing that, he talked about this thing called the id.
And he knew about the limbic system because he was a contemporary of the early neuroanatomists who plotted out and diagrammed Brockmann, Paul Broca and Wernicke and all those early anatomists, neuroanatomists.
Yeah.
Freud knew all that stuff.
Yeah.
But he made it palatable, made it understandable to everybody else.
Right.
You know, took it out of medicine and gave it, made it possible for other people to read and think about it.
Right. Because I think that if you think about how we conceptualized people, humans, at that time, at that period in history,
right.
it was not biological at all.
And most of it was done by adult males.
Right.
I mean, the introspection, the mm-hmm. thinking, it was thinking about adult males.
Right.
Women were almost inconsequential.
Yeah.
Children were little adults.
Right.
And so all the theorizing was about adult males.
Right.
And usually adult males in power.
Right. Because, at the time, men would leave their family for months at a time and be gone. And just the expectation is that I'll just walk back in just like I, walked to the store and came back.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And there were those expectations. So when a woman or a child did not behave in the way that they expected them to behave, was not completely compliant, mm-hmm. There was something wrong with
that person.
Right. Right.
Wrong with the woman or wrong with the child. So with women, it was they were hysterical.
Right.
With children is they were possessed by the devil. So
right.
You had to beat the devil out of them.
I was just going to say that, at the time,
but
so much
of abnormal.
It, right. So much of it was, at that time period, was very religious based.
That's right.
And so, mm-hmm. They believed that that it needed to be handled from a, again, non-biological,
right.
spiritual, sort of unseen
that's right.
way.
Right. Mm-hmm.
And again, I think that that's what led to him going with the id and the ego and the superego and managing things that way, because that sort of made it this non-biological force.
Mm-hmm. And I think the magnificent contribution that Freud made is he said, we're driven by some sort of internal states that maybe we don't even fully understand.
Right.
It's not that women are mentally ill. It's not that children are possessed or they're wild animals. They're different. They're qualitatively right. different than adult males. And
mm-hmm.
so that's the great contribution, is that he started us thinking about the uniqueness of each
mm-hmm.
individual,
mm-hmm.
men, women, and children.
Right. Yeah,
so
that's
an enormous contribution to Western philosophical thought and
right.
medicine.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
So,
and,
yeah, we...
And again, it had never been done before.
Nobody had ever done it before Freud.
So when we think about, the three sets of three that you have sort of outlined for the class today, when we're thinking about personality, one of the things we think about is uniqueness.
That's right. So if we talk about what is personality, so
mm-hmm.
we know, what is it, where does it come from? The first thing is the first of the three. So write this down.
Oh.
What is it?
Uniqueness.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So uniqueness is that, we all present with a unique sort of arrangement
right.
Of characteristics and traits
mm-hmm.
and things that define us and identify us.
Right.
And we're all a little bit different.
We're all a little different, right.
And it's mm-hmm. sort of like our personality is sort of like our thumbprint in that sense that, you can take a whole group of extroverts, but when you put them together, they may present in extremely different ways because
mm-hmm.
while they may be similar on that spectrum,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
they may be very different and on some of the other areas that we think about or some of the other traits and characteristics that we think of with personality.
That's right. And even parents who have more than one child
mm-hmm.
immediately are immediately aware of the uniqueness of each of the children. You know,
right.
they say, well, I have three kids and they're completely different. I mean, yes,
right.
there are some similarities,
yeah.
but they each have a unique personality.
And it's funny because, how many times have you heard a parent say, well, if I would have had that one first, we probably wouldn't have had any more.
It would have been a singleton.
Right. And it's like,
right.
we know that if we had had the one with the more challenging temperament and,
right.
and personality to begin with, that would have changed, some of the other decisions
right.
that we would have made later in life.
But nature tricks us.
It
gives
does.
Us an easy one first. And he says, hey, I can do this again.
Says, look how easy this is.
Then you have a middle child.
Oh.
No, it's
a middle
true.
Child because that implies that you're going to have a third.
Well, of course.
Well,
some people did.
Some people didn't.
Okay. Michael, we're talking to you. Brother Michael, we're talking to you. So what we see then is this, when we talk about personality, the first of the three things we talk about is uniqueness. And then what you have from Freud on is the attempt to explain personality.
Right.
But each person does it from his or her own unique
mm-hmm.
perspective.
Right.
And so personality theory then develops, you have biological explanations and
right.
disposition. So each theorist brings his or her own thinking to explaining why we're unique or how we become unique.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. It's fascinating the similarities and differences between some of these different theories. And we were talking, you know, at the beginning about this idea of doing a course, yeah. Offering a course on personality theory, mm-hmm. and personality psychology. And that would be a great opportunity to kind of go in some detail with some of these right. theories and ideas.
Yeah, because Freud, as we said, Freud talks about these internal states.
Mm-hmm.
Other people talk about genetics.
Right.
You know, it's not, where does it come? It comes from genetics. Other people talk about, well, no, your personality develops from the things that you learn, the things that you experience over
right.
time. So each of these theorists, that would be a good way to approach this
yeah.
In the webinar, just explain each of the theories.
Right.
There are 8 or 10
yeah.
Theories. And
like, I really like the attachment theory.
Right.
Because attachment
right.
theory, well, attachment theory combined with some of the biological things, because,
right.
you know,
right.
temperament.
You and I tend to be more biological.
Right.
In our, right.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So
evolutionary.
Right. Exactly. Right. Exactly. Because mm-hmm. your temperament, you know, your temperament is a biological manifestation. Right? I mean,
it's related to your brain chemistry.
Right.
And your brain chemistry comes from your forefathers,
right.
your parents, your grandparents.
Right.
So it your brain chemistry is inherited.
Right. You can see one's temperament after the, you know, within the first couple of days to a week or so of life.
Of life, right.
You know, you see it very, very early on. And so it's not like the infant has had many experiences from which it develops this
That's right.
temperament.
Mm-hmm.
It just is what it is. And it's fascinating how generally consistent
right.
temperament becomes, because it, you know, you can see it in infancy, and when you see that kid as they're approaching their adolescent years,
right.
there's a lot of similarities
right.
in the way that they just manage change, that they handle schedules and routines and
right.
things like that. It's fascinating.
A hyperreactive infant
mm-hmm.
typically becomes a hyperreactive teenager
right.
and a hyperreactive adult. It
exactly.
doesn't change much over time.
Right. So you know, and then, so you have the temperament forming the foundation, and
mm-hmm.
then upon that it is built personality through experiences,
right.
attachment,
right. Right.
which is, you know, attachment is sort of the first thing that happens that's so important. So,
right.
and
so
we're not going to get into all of that now. But
what we're talking about, we have segued into the second of 3 points,
right.
which is consistency.
Right.
Okay. Personality is consistent
right.
over time. This is a discussion of state and trait.
Right.
Traits are enduring. They persist over time. Whereas state is, I'm angry right now.
Right.
But I'm not going to be angry for the rest of my life.
Exactly.
So there's a consistency quality to personality.
Yeah. And I think that people, I love the way that so many in our field,
mm-hmm.
I'm going to say that very generally like that,
mm-hmm.
that so many in our field are bandwagoners. Right, they are either they're traitists or they're
mm-hmm.
statists,
right?
And they act as though so many of these things are mutually exclusive. We have the debate about nature versus nurture.
Mm-hmm.
It's
mm-hmm.
like, why are we still talking about a debate between nature versus nurture?
Right.
We know it's both.
Right, 50-50.
But there are people who continue to argue
right.
either side, and the reality is that what we know is that you are born with the potential for a particular range.
Right. That's
right.
right. Yeah.
And this is another situation mm-hmm. where I wish that we had a piece of paper or something to draw.
Okay, hold it up.
You know, if you think about the, yeah, it's like, we could use it like this. So, you know, if you think about, you know, this is the continuum of introversion and extroversion. Oh, you can't really see it on the camera there.
In a heavy duty marker.
Right. And so this is introversion and extroversion. You were born, say, with this range here. And so depending on your life experiences, you're gonna vary somewhere within that range.
Right.
Oh, it got like dark too, didn't it, in the video. You're gonna vary somewhere within that range. But if you're here, you're never going to be down here unless something happens and, you know, some terrible trauma or something like that.
Trauma or some significant event.
Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, you're going to be within that range.
Right.
And
right.
that's it.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with IQ. It's the same thing with these personality traits.
Right.
You were born with this with this possibility.
A good analogy is your physical stature.
Right.
You know, you're, if your parents have a size 10 foot, mm-hmm. you're not going to have a 14, and right. you're not going to have a 5.
Right.
You're going to be somewhere in this range, okay? If right. your parents are about 5'8 or 5'9, mm-hmm. chances are you're going to be about 5'8 or 5'9.
Right.
You're going to be pretty much like your parents.
Exactly.
Every once in a while, you get that errant mutant gene that, right. that appears, but that's a mutation. That's the exception.
I want the one to be Wolverine if I get a mutant gene. That's the one I want. Just saying, not to take you off topic, but go ahead. Sorry.
Whatever I was saying is now lost but forever.
You have this range for personality. Right. And it's not going to... You are not likely to be... to go outside of that range.
Right.
A person who is relatively extroverted, mm-hmm. it will be a very rare occasion that you will see them as a complete introvert.
Right. It can't happen.
Right.
But it's going to take an enormous environmental stress over a long period of time.
Right. Or it would be a very isolated, momentary episode.
Right. Right.
You know,
right.
like if they're in a setting that's extremely intimidating, mm-hmm. Extremely stressful, and they're right. already experiencing some stress, then they may be a little bit further down mm-hmm. that spectrum. But again, generally speaking, you're going to fall within that range.
That's right.
So when we talk about consistency, that's what we're talking about. You're going to be relatively consistently within mm-hmm. that right. range.
We talked about the big five,
right?
The personality traits, and they're called traits because mm-hmm. of their consistency.
Right.
And you're somewhere on that continuum. We talked mm-hmm. about that each mm-hmm. day, that
yeah.
you're either sort of tending toward this end or tending toward this
right.
end. And that's not going to change much over time.
Right.
Change a little bit, not much.
Right, not much.
So that's the second. Now, the third part of personality is what some people refer to as content and process. That is to say, your personality is something, that's mm-hmm. content,
right?
That does something.
Oh.
That's process.
Yes.
Okay? So another way of viewing personality is, one way is uniqueness, a second is consistency, and a third is that it is something that does something.
Right.
It explains why we do the things that we do.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And it's, again, it is just an underlying drive. And so when you're talking to somebody, you say, why did you do that?
Right.
They don't know.
What you're asking them is, what is it about your personality
right.
that led you to make that decision?
Right. And when they say, I don't know, they're probably right.
They probably don't know. Right.
Because mm-hmm. we don't always know why we do what we do.
That's right. It's not immediately available in our mm-hmm. conscious mind.
Right. Mm-hmm. Now, we may be able to sort of mull over it a little bit and right. think about it and come up with some hypotheses.
Right.
But generally speaking, we don't know.
We don't know.
It just is. Mm-hmm. It just does what it does. It just
right.
happens the way that it happens. So,
that's right.
So yeah. So when we're talking about personality, we're talking about these three
right.
concepts: the uniqueness, the consistency, and that content and process piece of who we are.
Okay. So that's the first of three parts. What is personality?
Mm-hmm.
The second of three parts is, where does it come from?
Yeah.
And there are three parts under this.
Three more.
Number one is your basic temperament.
Yep, that's what okay. we were talking about a minute ago.
You're born with mm-hmm. these traits. Probably
right.
they're probably related to your brain chemistry.
Yeah,
we have about 100 chemicals racketing around in our brain every day. We extract them from the foods that we eat, so we don't eat exactly the same thing every day.
Right.
So, and we don't metabolize things exactly the same way every day. So we tend to our personality change our state of mind
mm-hmm.
sort of changes
mm-hmm.
From day to day. But we inherit our parents' brain chemistry. And therefore, we inherit similar traits.
Right.
Because we've inherited their brain chemistry.
Right.
So we tend to be pretty much the way our parents are.
Yeah. Okay? Generally speaking.
If your parents are hyperreactive, mm-hmm. you know, if they're, you know, we talk a lot about ADHD being
right.
an inherited disorder. Well, you're inheriting not the ADHD, you're inheriting
the brain chemistry.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's just the way, I mean, if we, one day, one of the courses that we'll do will be on biological psychology,
mm-hmm.
so we can talk about some of this stuff. Because when you think about, if you think about everything that has to happen correctly for your brain to work to begin with, your head will explode. It is just fascinating that anything actually works. I mean, the fact that I can raise my hand when I'm doing that right there is a pretty fascinating event. But you're right. Between the chemicals and you know what we're getting from our family and the things that influence the quantity of chemicals in our brain with our diet and exercise and those kinds of things, all of that stuff influences our temperament.
But temperament appears very early, as we said, during infancy. And some children have an easy temperament, some have a difficult temperament. But it you bring your temperament with you when you're born. Okay?
Right.
So that's the first one.
Number two.
Now, added to your basic temperament are environmental experiences.
Right. Okay? So you have all of those experiences that we have in life.
Right.
And again, the critical nature of this is that begins at birth.
That's right.
You know, this isn't off topic, but you know, there are those who are now talking. We talked about the gut biome and how our biological system works. We've talked about that in previous podcasts. They're talking about now how method of delivery, the way in which you're born, C-section versus natural delivery, that makes a difference. That what you're exposed to during a natural delivery versus the more sterile nature of a cesarean delivery is significant, and that a lot of times the babies born via cesarean aren't exposed to things that they need to be exposed to to develop some of the gut biome and some of the immunities and things like that we need. And that natural delivery is really important to expose the child to some of the different things that they need to.
Supposed to hang around in the birth canal for a
while. Yeah.
Interesting.
And so again, experiences begin.
But that makes sense because now we're talking about exposing children to foods early, so that they develop tolerance, Because if they don't get them. You know, like peanuts.
Right.
Expose your children early so that they develop a tolerance for it and they don't have resistance later on.
Right. But this exposure that we're talking about, and arguably it begins during development, prenatal development, because what the mother eats, the amount of stress that the parent is experiencing, all of that influences the brain chemistry. Mm-hmm. So you see, it just keeps going back and back and back. From the very beginning, those environmental experiences and exposures have an influence on who you become.
Right. And the first environmental influence that we have is our family of origin.
Right.
Okay. So genetic plus how do things work in your your family of origin.
Right.
Now, at some point during early childhood, 4, 5, 6, 7, children venture outside the home. And they go to friends and family and school, and it's sort of there's this microcosm of the family of origin, and there's a macrocosm of a larger environment.
Bronfenbrenner.
Okay? Bronfenbrenner. My students will know Bronfenbrenner. They'll recognize that. And so
I mentioned him in my qualifying exams.
Did you?
Yeah.
They loved it.
Bronfenbrenner.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, so you have your family of origin and the influences that they exert on your temperament.
Right.
Then you have your friends and family and the influence that they exert, the influence that school exerts, and the influence that churches exert, and scouts and sports and all these other activities that we do. So all of those play a role in shaping your temperament. They add to your temperament.
Right. Okay? Yeah, they
don't change it
As
much as influence.
They influence where within that span.
But the place on the spectrum remains pretty much the same.
Right.
But is it influenced? Okay.
Right.
So that's the second.
All right.
And then there's
Number three.
Third, which is learning. What we learn through those experiences. Okay?
Right.
And with learning, we're talking about things that we learn in school, but mainly things that we learn in our culture.
You know,
we're born into a culture, and so we act a certain way. We're expected to act a certain way to fit into that culture.
Right.
If you grow up in an Oriental culture, you're expected to act a certain way. If you grew up in a Western European culture, an Eastern European culture, South American culture, each of these cultures also impose and influence how you express your personality.
Right. And a lot of that is through modeling.
Right.
And through expectations. Sort of, and many times expectations are unspoken expectations.
Right. That's right.
Nobody
That's right.
says, this is what I expect you to do. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of
this
known.
Is what, this is what we do.
Yeah.
This and, is how
and,
we do this.
And that's the learning you're talking about, because right. it's not a direct instruction necessarily.
Right.
It's,
but think of the influence that Christmas has mm-hmm. on people. If you have Jewish friends who don't celebrate, they celebrate Hanukkah. Mm-hmm. And at first you think, well, Hanukkah's like Christmas. No, Hanukkah has nothing to do with Christmas.
Right.
Okay. But the December experience mm-hmm. for Jews is completely different than
right.
the December experience for Christians.
Right.
And that also exerts an influence on your personality, on
yeah.
who you become.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
There's no formal teaching.
Right.
You absorb your culture.
And it's so funny. Not funny. It's so interesting, because we impose our worldviews
right.
and perspectives on other people.
Right.
And so, you know, kids who celebrate Christmas, you know, they talk about feeling bad for those kids who don't celebrate
right.
Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, well, that poor kid who doesn't get...
They don't care.
They don't. That's just normal for them.
That's right.
You know?
You ask a singleton, well, what was, you know, do you feel bad that I didn't know anything else?
They don't
I
know
was
what
an
it's
only
like
child.
To have a sibling.
I don't know what, I don't have any basis of comparison.
Right,
mm-hmm.
right.
This is how it is.
Yeah.
One thing we want to mention, when we talk about learning, it also depends on your experiences, you know, if you grew up in poverty or whatever. And it made me think of this. If you were born a slave,
mm-hmm.
that would affect your personality development.
Right.
But it wouldn't affect your basic temperament.
Right.
It would change how you express.
Mm-hmm.
It would not change who you are. And if
right.
you think about the personality of a slave,
right.
some were quiet, some
mm-hmm.
were obedient,
mm-hmm.
and others remained resistant.
Right.
Because their temperament
yeah,
didn't
they are.
Change very
mm-hmm.
much, even with the burden of slavery.
Right.
Prisoners of war.
Right.
Concentration camps.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some people succumbed and died, and others fought. That was their basic temperament.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And so you can be influenced by circumstances, especially the expression of your personality can be influenced by circumstances, but your temperament isn't going to change much despite your circumstances.
And a lot of what you're talking about there sounds like resilience.
Mm-hmm.
Because you much of your ability to be resilient
mm-hmm.
is rooted in your temperament.
Right.
You
That's
know?
Right.
And sometimes it's that resilience early on may be seen as stubbornness.
Mm-hmm.
It may be seen as difficulty.
Right.
And you think, wow, you know, this kid is tough. But then, you know, those kids who you can't get to change, those kids
right.
that you can't get to do anything that they don't want to do
right.
are going to be those kids who don't succumb to peer pressure,
mm-hmm.
that don't follow the norm just because everybody else is. You know, they are focused on
right.
what they want, and
mm-hmm.
and that can be a very important strength.
Right. Yeah. Elie Wiesel talks about this in his book Night. He survived a concentration camp when he was a young boy.
Mm-hmm.
And he talks about this resilience and determination and
right.
what some people possessed and some people didn't. And I think Wiesel was talking about temperament.
Right.
He was talking about the person's basic temperament.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
How what it took to survive.
Yeah. Right. All right, so we did, what is it? We did, where does
working.
It come from? Number three.
And the
big,
third one
third
is,
category.
This is all about the self.
The self.
About understanding the self.
Right.
And the self, like the other, this is part three of three, also has three components.
Right.
The self is made up of self-concept,
mm-hmm.
self-esteem,
mm-hmm.
and your identity.
Right.
Okay, so first you have self-concept.
Right. Yeah, and so this is, you know, what we're really talking about are many of your attributes and, you know, things that you can do, things that you, we may be getting into the area of skills and,
right.
and talents and those kinds of things.
Your attributes, your assets, your liabilities,
right.
you know, how do you view your, you know, what are your assets? What are your attributes? What are the things that you can do well? What are the things that you don't do well?
Yeah, because we've all seen the videos. This is the glory of YouTube, right? Is you can go on and you can see 3-year-olds, you know, swing a baseball bat perfectly.
Yeah.
And you know that that's not experience because they're three.
Right.
But you know, they just have that form. It's just a natural physicality mm-hmm. that they possess. We've seen children who, you know, videos of children who are 5 or 6 years old play complex music on the mm-hmm. piano, and their fingers can't even reach an octave,
right.
but yet they're playing this complex music.
Right.
And again, at the very most, they've only had a couple of years of instruction.
Couldn't have happened, right.
And so it can't be
training. If you're
5 years
old, can't be 20 years of training.
Right. So you know, that self-concept of, you know, what are your skills? What are mm-hmm. what attributes do you bring to the table
right.
that are just sort of natural?
Right. Mm-hmm. And your understanding mm-hmm. of those
of that.
Things
mm-hmm.
that you do possess.
Right.
This remember, the third part is about self.
Right.
You know, who am I? And the first thing is your self-concept. That is, do you understand your attributes?
Mm-hmm.
Attributes and liabilities,
right.
assets and liabilities.
Right, okay. Strengths and weaknesses,
right.
yeah.
And the second one is self-esteem.
Right, and so this is how you feel about those things.
That's right. That's
yeah.
right. How do I feel about myself?
Right.
How do I feel about my abilities? How do
right.
I feel about my physical appearance?
Right.
Okay.
And so we certainly see people who have skills and attributes that are certainly strengths for them,
mm-hmm.
but they don't feel like they are.
That's right.
You know, they have low self-esteem.
Self-esteem, right.
And so despite some of these strengths, they don't really utilize those strengths because they don't themselves mm-hmm. view them as strengths.
Right, and we see this...
So this is sort of a being cognizant right. of those strengths and weaknesses.
Right, you get extreme examples of this where you get somebody who's really, really attractive, physically
mm-hmm.
attractive, and they, oh no, I'm ugly, my hair is this, and I have this, and my eyes aren't straight,
mm-hmm.
and my nose is crooked. None of that is true to the rest of the world.
Right.
But you define yourself that way. An extreme example of this is body dysmorphia,
right.
where you see yourself as being much bigger than you really are. That's a self-assessment that is
right.
distorted.
Well, and I think that another example of this, a little bit less pathological perhaps, was remember when, well, you might not remember this, but remember when American mm-hmm. Idol first came out, mm-hmm. first started, and these people would get up and audition. And of course, they kept them in intentionally, but they were just awful. but they would get up with all this confidence. That's an example of you have lots of self-esteem,
right.
but you don't have the self-concept. You don't have the attributes that you think you
assets.
Have.
Right.
And so you have
right.
that's sort of the other side of it is where you
right.
you have more esteem than you do attribute.
That's right. You have a much higher opinion of your abilities than you should have.
And that's a very American thing.
That's right.
Because that's been in a lot of been in the news lately that, you know, American students are low on the list of reading and math and
right.
all that kind of stuff. But we top the list in self-esteem.
Yes, we do.
We feel much more competent
right.
than we may actually be.
Than we really are. And when you'll ask young children how they doing in schools, I'm doing great, you know,
mm-hmm.
and they're failing or they're behind. Because they, very young children, don't make accurate assessments
right.
until they're a little bit older. In fact, we make the concept of self, self-concept, self-esteem, all those things, sort of, I don't want to say solidify, but they are pretty much in place by the time you're 8 or 10 years old.
Right.
Okay. And
right.
so it's we're not very accurate
mm-hmm.
when we're very young.
Right.
But by 8 or 10, we start to develop about the end of elementary school.
Right.
Our self-concept and our self-esteem are pretty much established. Identity's going to come
a little bit later.
Going to get shaved off
mm-hmm.
a little bit during adolescence.
Right.
But the first two, self-concept and self-esteem, are pretty much formed by age 10 or 11.
And we're going to go back real quick to the brain, because
mm-hmm.
part of the reason that those things start to solidify during late elementary school years is because the brain reaches a point at that time when it can make certain comparisons.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know, kids, young kids, you know, see themselves as the same as everybody else.
Right.
And so they, you know, oh no, I'm the fastest kid in my kindergarten class. Mm-hmm. And you know, you're not.
Right.
But, but by the time they get to the point where their brain has developed well enough for them to have sort of some of these abstractions where they can compare multiple pieces of information at the same time, they can say, well, he's better at math than I am, but you know, I'm better at reading than that person. And, and you know, they can start making some of those comparisons to, you know, they're not seeing themselves as a single attribute. They're seeing themselves as an individual with multiple attributes that can be at varying levels.
And that occurs about age 8 or 9,
right,
you know, when they get that ability. And that continues for the rest of your life because now you say, well, I'm good at this,
right,
but I'm not so good at this.
Right.
It's not a global assessment after, you know, you reach adolescence. It's a domain specific.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So I'm a very good student, but I'm a terrible athlete.
Right.
I'm a great friend, but I'm not a very good quarterback, you know, So it's domain specific after about age 10 or 11.
Right.
And
as you said, you know, as you start reaching adolescence, the critical, you know, our friend Eric Erickson talked about, well, I didn't know Eric Erickson. I don't know if
we
you
were
guys,
contemporaries.
We are.
Yeah, we used to talk by phone.
Grad school together.
Keep it up.
But, you know, Eric Erickson talked about the developmental period in adolescence where you're creating, you're formulating your identity.
That's the big struggle in adolescence,
right,
is deciding who I am.
Right.
Okay, that's when that process really shifts into high gear. And
right,
we spend most of our adolescent years deciding who we are, what kind of person we're going to be.
And it's for that reason that during adolescence, our teenagers work very hard to oppose us. Is that
yes,
a nice way to say it?
That's a nice way to say it.
Because what they have to do to figure out who they are is that they have to make sure that they're not you.
That's right.
And so to do that, they have to take some opposing views. So they may, you know, a hunting family that, you know, has, you know, meat with every meal.
Animal
those kids
heads
will,
hanging on walls.
Right. They'll become vegans.
Right.
And then, you know, then you have, you know, those people, those kids who are raised in very religious families, they become atheists or they'll switch to a different religion.
I said that last night in the talk, and I
yeah.
said, you know, if you're, I said, who's highly religious here? And they raise their hand. I said, your teenagers are going to become atheists.
Right.
They
temporarily.
If you're a carnivore, if you like meat,
mm-hmm.
they're going to become vegetarians.
Yeah.
Okay. That's how they separate. They
mm-hmm.
they must separate from us in
right.
these significant ways.
And
it's harmless,
yeah.
it's temporary,
mm-hmm.
but they have to do it.
And we see it manifest in so many ways
mm-hmm.
because they're going to choose friends that you don't approve of because you don't approve of them.
Because you don't approve
they're
of them.
They're going to question, you know, their sexuality.
That's
their
right. Important for you, if it's important to you that they be heterosexual, chances are they're going to dabble with bisexual or
right.
homosexual behavior.
Right.
Okay.
In the very least, entertain the idea.
That's right.
Even if they never do anything,
This is when kids start to think that maybe they were adopted. You
right.
know, it's about these years when they say, you know, I'm so different. I don't really fit in the family.
Mm-hmm.
I'm unique. Maybe these aren't my real parents.
Right.
That's when those thoughts creep
yeah.
in. You come to your senses later on.
Right.
But you have these identity struggles
right.
during these teen years.
In our book, we talk about the trip around the moon.
Yeah.
And it's because during this time, they blast
they
off
disappear.
From Earth. And they go and make this trip around the moon because this is where they're figuring out who they are, and,
right.
and they have to be away from you to do that.
And they have to separate. So we lose radio contact with
mm-hmm.
our kids,
mm-hmm.
sometimes for a few months, sometimes for more than a year.
Right.
Okay.
And the more, the better that the parent responds to it,
right.
the more likely it is that they're going to land back, at least in the same geographic region.
On the same continent
right.
as you.
Yes. If not, if you
yeah.
really fight and battle during this period, then they're very likely to land in California,
they might
and you're
stay
still here in Florida.
That's right. They may separate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you don't value who they are, And it's very difficult for some parents if you suddenly are told that your child is gay, for example. Right. That's very difficult for some parents to accept. And if you don't accept your children unconditionally, they're going to go places where they are accepted unconditionally.
And the examples we gave so far are extreme examples, of course.
Granted.
But it may be something as simple as, you know, they want to dye their hair a strange color, or they want to get some additional piercings or something like that. And those things, in the grand scheme, are very harmless.
Very, that's right.
You know, hair dye, you know, ask anybody. Hair dye is temporary. Before you know it, the roots are coming out, and you're like, oh, I got to go do it again. No. So it's not going to last very long.
The novelty will wear off of all of these things.
Yeah, so you have to allow for some of that, because this is a critical point in their personality development.
That's right. They have to do this. And this will shape
the
eventual personality that they end up with. It'll sort of solidify by late teens, early 20s.
Right.
It's not going to change very much after that.
Yeah.
So the environmental influences last through the first two decades of life.
Right, right. And if they, you know, if they experiment with some of these things and then they come back, you know, you have to welcome them back. You know, the prodigal son type of approach, perspective, because it's an important journey.
Right.
Sometimes it ends by the time they're 20. Sometimes it ends when they're 25.
Right.
Sometimes when they're a little bit older. But that most often has to do with how the parent responds to it, as opposed to the child, him or herself.
So, parental response after that.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Right. So you have three
under
personality.
Three.
Uniqueness.
Three.
Is one.
Mm-hmm.
No. What is it?
Yeah.
Where does it come from?
Right.
And how do we develop the sense of self?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So if you were taking good notes, you should have three things in each of three segments.
Right.
If you weren't.
Well, detention.
You're going into personality jail.
So. We're
going
to trust that you go and sit in ISS today.
No, but this we hope this was helpful, informative, useful in some way.
Yeah.
It is important. Our whole notion of personality continues to change as people add to the theories. Like we said last week, the most popular, I guess,
most
conceptualization of personality today is the Big Five, the Neo-Pi that we talked about last week. So, and again, we encourage you to go in and do one of those little free self-tests.
Right, right.
Figure out where you are. Figure out where your kids are. Figure out where your spouse is.
Right.
It makes life a lot easier knowing these things.
It can. Mm-hmm. It can. Yeah. It sure can explain some things.
It explains. If you have a hyper-responsive spouse...
see that deep breath.
It's good to know. It's good to know how hard you want to push on a hyper-responsive spouse. You may not want to push too hard.
See?
I'm not going to say
anymore. Things that you learn.
I'm not going to say anymore.
Or if you have a hyper-responsive podcast co-host, you want to be cautious what you do, because as soon as the camera turns off, you know, there's a lot of apologies is all I'm going to say about
that. That's right. That's right. And
I'm so sorry.
I deserve those apologies too. So.
So, all right. Anything else about personality?
I don't think so, but...
we got to do that course.
One other comment. Well, one is we have to do a course on normal personality development.
Correct.
We also have to talk about personality disorders.
Yes.
Really, really important.
Yeah.
It's important for people to be able to know that we're way beyond normal.
Right.
And that maybe we should get some professional advice here. Because you may be dealing with a personality disorder.
Yeah.
Yeah, we should probably talk about personality disorders at some point.
I think so.
Okay.
It's a good idea.
I'd love to hear from our listeners.
Yeah.
Okay.
Always.
I had a great idea.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to write it down,
uh-huh.
and we're going to announce it pretty soon.
Do I know about this idea?
Not yet.
You see what I'm saying?
But it's...
Let the apologies begin.
But you don't... Nobody knows about it. But I'll talk to you about it in a minute.
All right.
We like to hear from our listeners, so I'm going to ask our listeners to write in, but I'm going to ask them to write something very specific.
But you're going to tell me after we start recording. How will they know to do it unless they...
Well,
it's okay.
I want
to
make sure...
You don't have to tell me now.
Being that I'm the agreeable one in this dyad, I want to make sure that you agree. before we announce it.
Oh, I see.
Being the considerate, conscientious, agreeable person that I am.
All right.
And forget to be afraid.
That's right. And that'll be it for today.
So. Thankfully.
All right. So we will be back next week with a whole new set of topics. That's for next right. week.
Who new topics.
Got to figure out what we're going to talk about next
some
week.
Some new soil.
It's going to be some
week.
Good stuff. So.
That's right.
All right. So have a great weekend. Until then, stay happy, stay healthy, and forget to be afraid.